Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 531. Science Faction, I call BS!
Now, I'm a little disappointed. You know, normally, I call BS for years has been just kind of a let's beat Damien in a very formulaic way. I kind of thought with the Patreon that I was kind of getting put out to stud, that my beatings would be much more casual. You know, we wouldn't be under any, like, quotas. You know, like, Damien has to lose this much flesh, bleed this much.
I wish you didn't have to lose this much. Like, I wish that you just chose to win a game of I Call BS instead of, as our Patreons certainly know, and many of the listeners who are probably getting to hear this for free for this special Patreon gift episode, as they probably know, you have yet to win a single game of I Call BS despite playing it weekly for 7 years.
I finally understand how Fox News wins. Like people don't go back and listen to every episode. If they don't go back and all they're hearing is what you're saying, they would believe what you're saying is true.
You're right. What I am saying is true. That is a good way to put it.
In fact,
is a good way to put it. What I'm saying is true. And you have lost every game for 7 years.
That is factually not true. In fact, in the before time when we had scientists on this show, some of the worst moments of each scientist's life, to include times when parents or loved ones have died, have been when I have beaten them in this game.
That is not the case.
Let's get Dr. Troy in and a polygraph test, and we'll see what happens.
I love it when he yelled, fuck you, Damien. That was still my favorite part. Oh, by the way, you know, I guess we should probably tell people this. We didn't mention this on the main episode, but since we're going to let this out for a freebie, we'll let people know. We usually do a year-end episode that's like the best of Science Faction. And I was getting ready to start putting that together. And then I realized we just hit 500, like, I don't know, 2 months ago or something. Like, we just did our 500th episode. And we already did a best of. And it would be pretty lame to try and do a best stuff of the past 2 months if we already did one that that covered that time period. So we decided to kind of hold off on the best of because we don't want to be like one of those Star Trek episodes where they were on a writer's strike, so they just kind of put together clips of old Star Trek episodes.
I did opt for a holodeck mishap episode, but Bobby, Mr. Negative, said no.
I'm not going to let you sexually assault Moriarty again.
He knows what he did. Dude, if I'm assaulting Sherlock, I could see your argument, but Moriarty is objectively an evil man. I'm going to be controversial here. Some people deserve to be sexually assaulted. In fact, I would sexually assault Hitler. If we could go back in time, I would sexually assault Hitler for freedom.
Hey, what if you did that and then you realize, because time is cyclical, that the thing that caused Hitler to be such a bad guy was this horrible sexual assault that happened to him?
Okay, flip side of the argument. We could only go back in time far enough to right before he killed himself in the bunker. Turns out he wasn't about to kill himself in the bunker. He was about to flee to Argentina. What I did to him made him kill himself in the bunker. Flip side.
This actually reminds me of a story I've told you before. I think you like this because it's a true story. And I grew up with an old German woman who lived across the street that was like my mom's friend. They were like Eastern European friends. And she was just like the worst person ever. She was just a horrible person her whole life. She was bitter and mean and angry. She'd take every opportunity to shit on people, cause trouble. She was just a really bad person. And she ended up getting like this terminal cancer. And this really weird thing happened where like, she got terminal cancer and she like announced it to everybody. And then like all of a sudden, she stayed a really shitty person. Like I kept expecting from the Hallmark movie of the week for her to like change her ways and discover what the evil inside of her and decide to try. But like she got worse because she knew there were no consequences. So she started doing things like stealing from stores and stuff because she got like, she has like 6 months left to live. And so she's like, even if they catch me, I'll die before the trial even happens. So she would like steal stuff. She drove without a license. She drove drunk all the time. Like she became actually worse than the horrible person that she was. And then when she finally died, I said something to my mom and I was like, that's good. Like the world is a better place with this person dead. And my mom's like, well, I didn't want to tell you this while she was alive, but you know, she grew up through World War II and you know, there was some horrible stuff going on in Germany and she just had like an awful childhood. Like it was really bad. Like some really horrible things happened to her. And I thought for a second, I was like, good. I know it's like reverse karma, but I'm at least glad that some horrible things happened to her before she lived this scotch-free life of I'm gonna burn the ship to the ground as I drive it in because there are no consequences. Like I'm happy to know she didn't grow up prancing through a field of lilies and then just acted like a horrible person. At least, even if the comeuppance came at the beginning of her life, I'm glad at least that happened.
Okay, that's great to hear. Then you also might be happy to know that thanks to time travel technology that we will invent and use on our 10th anniversary episode, by the way, Bobby, I am telling you this from the future, then you should know that Hitler, before the bullet went through his head, was forcibly sodomized with a pineapple. And that should give you that same good feeling that you had when your mom told you about that.
That's what I was going for. Unfortunately, though, he did actually win a game of I Call BS against you right before he died. We went there to try and torture him with a loss, but Damien refused to win even in that circumstance.
Yeah, but to be fair, like you essentially played that same character where like you shit on me, but do everything you can to get the guest to win, except the guest was fucking Hitler this time. It actually was a very controversial episode.
Maybe you should have just won. All right, let's move right on to I Call BS.
I call.
Ring, ring.
I call BS.
Even Hitler's bagging on me. Oh, that's right. I got you good. Way to go, Bobby.
You're a dumb little bitch, Damien. You're a dumb little bitch.
Yeah, way to edit around all of his anti-Semitic remarks, too. By the way, that's what you edited out, not everything else. That's the only thing you edited out.
Yeah, he had like a 30-minute diatribe on your nose. It was mean.
Yeah, like, listen, a lot of what he said was anti-Semitic, but he had some legit burns, but I found a way to edit around them.
Oh, dear. All right, I Call BS, for those of you guys who are listening for free on our non-Patreon feed, is a game where I read four science news articles, some of which are real, some of which are BS, standing for bad science. And my panelist, Damien, usually competes against a scientist to see which ones are true and which ones are false and who can determine that the most. We do not have our scientists in studio, obviously, because of COVID. So we are doing this with just Damien himself. And I would not have predicted this a year ago. We've been doing this almost a year by ourselves. He has still not managed to win a single game despite not even having an opponent.
He has
lost to the empty chair.
There are games that I've won. I believe there's one game where I got four and Bobby just brushed right over it. We just went straight.
I don't think so. We went
straight into the end of the episode.
No, I don't think that happened.
By the way, you know, a lot of times as podcasts become bigger, fans develop like Wikipedia pages where each fan adds to things. And because we are a science podcast, yes, but there's also a lot of like fun things that are part of our science faction universe.
Yeah.
That don't exist outside of this podcast. So I just want to let it be known that Hitler, as part of canon and canon, has been a guest on this show. We say that it hasn't happened yet, but Terminator 2-wise, Hitler has been a guest on this show.
All right, let's go down to article number one. A new cheap catalyst has been discovered that can convert CO2 into jet fuel. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This sounds like something that I would stand outside gullible people outside NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory to get them to say, you know, close your eyes and open your mouth, baby. It's not sucking. I got something that'll catalyze CO2 into jet fuel for you. And it's really kind of sad because essentially some autistic 20-year-old gets tricked into performing a sexual act.
I thought you were sitting outside NASA the same way like crazy people do that are like, hey guys, I got a car that runs on water. All right, here's how it works. You just pour water in the gas tank and you drive all around. The government's trying not to let me make it, but I'm going to make a bunch of them. You want to help me out, NASA?
No. My guys, like, those guys are like the Planned Parenthood protesters outside of NASA. In fact, I would kind of come in the way in the same way that like somebody who's trying to sexually groom somebody in prison would. Like, hold on. I'll protect you. I'll help you get to the front door. But in the meantime, I have a toothpick in my mouth, sunglasses. I'm flipping a coin as well as shuffling cards at the same time.
That's impressive.
A real shady looking character. Come on this way. I hear you're looking for a catalyst of sorts. Well, I got one for you. You're new around here to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. I haven't seen a looker like you.
I like that you're the shady guy preying on NASA guys. All right, Damien, was this science or bad science?
Science.
Wow, Damien, you actually got one right. I don't even remember the last time that has happened. This is indeed science. Now, we've actually talked about this chemical process before. It's one that can convert CO2 into fuel by making it into a hydrocarbon. The problem is, the way we've done it before, it takes numerous steps, and it usually needs an expensive catalyst, basically a rare earth metal like cobalt. We've also talked about air travel before. air travel is a huge CO2 emitter. In fact, for your average person, it is far and away the biggest CO2 emitter, or the biggest greenhouse gas emitter totally, of your entire life. You know, however you live, I think it's one cross-country flight is the equivalent of 6 to 8 months or something of life. That means your lights, your car, your heating, your cooling, your food, everything. If you put that together, it equals one round trip flight, and just your portion of that one round trip flight, not like the whole fucking plane. And so basically, air travel is a big deal when it comes to climate emissions, CO2 emissions. I think it's like 12% of all transportation costs in the world, CO2 emissions in the world, are from air travel. So big deal. So, but the idea is, if you can take CO2 that's out in the atmosphere and convert it into a jet fuel, well, then as that jet is using that fuel, it's essentially carbon neutral. Now, there are some caveats to that. Like, for instance, as you're about to hear, there is some energy involved in this process. So you have to include the energy it takes to turn that carbon into jet fuel. But the idea is that if you can balance that all out, it essentially becomes a carbon neutral source of jet fuel, which would be a huge contribution to slowing down climate change.
Yep, I knew that, which is why I guessed the answer correctly, Bobby.
So this is actually a single step process. And again, you don't need any of these rare earth metals like cobalt as catalyst. They actually just use iron. And what they use is some iron shavings, like an iron powder, that along with CO2, hydrogen, and then high heat and a lot of pressure, about 10 times one atmospheric pressure, they are able to turn that CO2, that ambient CO2, into a hydrocarbon jet fuel. Now, obviously, we have to heat the thing up and cause the pressure, which is an energy expenditure. But if you're able to do that with renewable resources, you know, if you can cause that compression with a windmill, if you can heat that up with solar
mulch pile,
then that could be a carbon neutral form of jet fuel, which again, if we figured out jet fuel, if we figured out a way to make jet fuel carbon neutral, we could very realistically start tackling climate change. So very, very cool discovery. Very cool because it is taking something that was possible in a lab setting, but wasn't really feasible economically, into something that is very feasible economically. I would be surprised if we don't hear more about this process being a major way to convert CO2 into active fuel. Article number two. A new study of weapons discovered in a now submerged prehistoric land have found those weapons to have been crafted out of human bone. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science. Human bone doesn't keep underwater. It was mermaid bone. Bam.
How do you tell mermaid bone from human bone, just out of curiosity?
Cloaca bones, not penis bones.
Oh, not penis bones. I feel like human bone would also be not penis bones.
Yeah, that's a weird thing. Yeah, if you have a penis bone, what's this ape doing in here? Or this dude who was so hung he needed some, internal structure to carry his piece. You know what I mean?
Sorry, Damien, it looks like you're living up to your reputation. You got this wrong. This is actually science. So this is a land we've actually talked about recently, Doggerland. Damien, do you remember talking about Doggerland a few weeks back?
I don't, but this sounds like a place that has good football. And, oh, no, European football, because it's Europe.
It does, yeah. So it is a vast area that's now underwater. It's now under the North Sea. It's basically the land in between England and the Netherlands that used to, 6,000 to 8,000 years ago, be basically just part of the northern European continent. It was outside of the water because sea level was 400 feet lower. And this was a lush area that we know had a thriving human culture, lots of animals, good hunting, a bunch of stuff happened. We talked the other week about how a tsunami essentially wiped out all but a few islands of it at one point. Very, very interesting story because I always think about this. I mean, this is not a small thing. This is not like a small coastal area. This is a gigantic area that was filled with human beings living their lives. That's just one day fucking got wiped out. So for a long time, people lived in this area, this Doggerland land. And they, as they would in normal archaeological sites, left tools around. We started finding these tools a long time ago, the 13, 14, 1500s, when the Netherlands would dredge up sand, they would find it. They would actually just wash up on the beaches in some places, but especially once the Netherlands started like constructing dams and then dredging sand out to construct more land and stuff, they would really start coming up. They'd start washing ashore. And one of the common things we would find is this barb. It's basically, it looks like a harpoon barb. And it's made out of bone, and it's a tip of like a spear. Now, they did an analysis of 10 of these barbs that washed up in that area, and they found that 8 of them were made out of deer bone, and 2 of them were made out of human bone. That is fairly rare in the archaeological record. It's not unheard of, but making tools out of human bone is fairly rare. It's not necessarily a great material to make tools out of. There's much better materials and stuff, so it almost seems like it might be a ceremonial thing or a religious custom or something like that.
Well, I'm sorry, how do you honor your grandfather, Bobby? He loved to go fishing. Now he can go fishing with me everywhere. Father's Day is hard.
But here's the thing to think about, and this is what's interesting. So they did isotope analysis of the bones, and as we talked about the other week with the elephants, you can tell an animal's life cycle based on isotope analysis. Looking at that isotope analysis, they were able to tell that the people that these tools were made out of, so not the people who made the tools, but the people the tools were made out of, their life, they mainly consumed terrestrial and freshwater animals, meaning they were nowhere near the sea, which is really, really interesting. So this thing that is now underwater, this great land that is underwater, was so large and contained so many people that at least the representative sample that we have are people who had no sea life whatsoever. They were nowhere near the coast. It'd be like living like in Arizona and, you know, you're just living your life and then thousands of years later, Arizona is the coast and people are like, oh, Arizona, oh, that guy was living on the beach. And you're like, no, no, he wasn't. He was living in the hottest place on Earth.
Baghdad?
No, the hottest place, Damien.
You've lost me.
Very, very interesting. All right. Article number 3. A new study indicates that the range of the black-legged tick, the parasitic arachnid that carries the bacteria that causes Lyme disease, will decrease over the next few decades, meaning we may have fewer cases of Lyme disease in the near future. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science. My stock guy called me the other day and said he doubled down in Lyme disease futures. Lyme disease is going to be huge in the future. Bad science.
Wow. I better check with my guy because he told me to option ticks. And so I'm betting that they're going to fail. So now we have to get together and figure out what to do because I don't want to lose my code over this.
So one of us is getting fucked right now, Bobby. Yeah. I'd like to figure out who.
Wait, we have the same money guy. He's playing us against each other. How could Scrooge McDuck have done this to us? He seems so reputable.
He dives into a sea of pennies. The guy has so many concussions. Oh my God.
He told me about this great retirement plan called the Ponzi scheme, and I bought into it wholeheartedly.
Well, they wouldn't name a Ponzi scheme, I told myself. That's too on the nose.
Well, Damien, you are right. This is bad science. It is the opposite. So models actually predict an increase in the range of black-legged ticks throughout the United States Midwest, which is very bad news because this is the tick that carries the bacteria that causes Lyme disease. Lyme is one of the fastest growing infectious diseases in the U.S. right now, and that's going to increase as the range of this tick increases.
But an essential component to lemon Lyme.
Well, that's Sprite disease, Damien, and that's totally different. So right now in the U.S., we have 30,000 diagnosed cases of Lyme disease a year, but a bunch of them go undiagnosed. And we actually think the real number is right around 300,000 estimated cases in the U.S. per year. There's some other countries that have it. Canada has a little bit. Europe has a little bit. But it's mainly a North American, mainly a U.S. problem. And as this tick's range expands in through the Midwest, we expect this to get much worse. Now, if you get Lyme disease early, basically what happens is this tick bites you. It's got a bacteria in it. It's a bacteria it gets from mice and other animals that is around. So the first the tick bites the mouse, it gets this bacteria, then it bites you. You get the bacteria in you. You get this very telltale bullseye-like mark, which I advise you to look up because when I say bullseye-like mark, I've heard that 1,000 times when people talked about Lyme disease. And then I looked it up and it legitimately looks like a bullseye. It's great.
I was going to get it cured, but this looks too badass.
It is pretty fucking badass.
Have a call myself Ace. You can't expect me to stop that.
Yeah, so it is pretty cool. Like you literally look like you're a walking banner for the department store Target. Like it is an exact replica. And if you catch it early enough, a simple antibiotic usually solves the problem and it's usually not a big deal. However, if you don't, then there is this kind of treatment-resistant or post-treatment Lyme disease that you can get that can actually be pretty detrimental to your health. It can cause long-term problems, long-term fatigue, a bunch of other issues, some issues with arthritic inflammation and stuff like that. And there's also other diseases that the tick carries as well. So you don't only just get Lyme disease. Oftentimes, you get multiple diseases. It could be a real bitch. Lyme disease is interesting because we didn't even discover it until the 1970s in a place called Lyme, Connecticut, which is how we got the name. And the bacteria that caused it wasn't discovered until the 1980s. Like, we discovered the disease in the late 70s, the actual bacteria in the early 80s. And it's a huge problem. Again, 300,000 Americans every year get it. A significant portion of those people will end up having some kind of long-term side effects or symptoms or whatever from it, and chronic issues. It's like a fairly big deal that we didn't even know was happening until the 1980s. And now we're seeing, it looks like we'll expand. Tracking these ticks, we've shown that they are currently, basically they're on the march. They're expanding out of places like Michigan into the lower Midwest. And the ticks are just basically going county by county. And as they do, fucking just Lyme diseases in those areas go from little to non-existent to just boom, shooting through the roof.
I know we're America. And so, you know, handling ticks probably isn't our thing. But one thing we as Americans do very well is contain diseases. I'd say your prayers, Lyme disease, your time is done. You've just entered the American South.
Well, you can, you know, if certain animals eat a lot of ticks, so like for instance, possums eat a bunch of ticks. So if you have a bunch of possums around, they can oftentimes keep tick populations under control. Damien, do you know why we don't have Lyme disease that much here where we live? Because we do have ticks, but do you know why we don't really have Lyme disease here?
Because we have possums and we shame our rednecks here. So there isn't as much possum stew or predation on possums.
No, that's not it at all. It's actually because instead of feeding off mice, for the most part, ticks here tend to feed off an animal called a fence lizard. And that fence lizard actually has a natural resistance to the bacteria that causes Lyme. So even if they have Lyme disease, once they bite the fence lizard, the Lyme disease basically gets cured. It's like they've got this antibiotic that kills them. So because of fence lizards, you and I can go hiking in the woods and be covered in ticks and still not get Lyme disease.
You know, I was told in the Army pretty early on, like, hey, when you go out into the woods, you have to have a battle buddy. You know, check your private areas, you know, like bend over, and in case you got a tick in there. First off, 99% of battle buddies aren't looking to check a sweaty dude's undercarriage.
I feel like it's a catch-22, because I feel like if you actually find a tick, you got a lot of questions about how detailed that guy is in his study. You're like, how the fuck did you notice that tick?
Yeah, like, first off, Bobby, like, if you and I were that age and, like, we did the check, would you look?
Yeah, no, not at all. You're fine. I go, you're fine.
No, Bobby, you really have to look. Like, a lot of times it's in the hair. Like, I have a lice comb.
Well, here's
can you use a lice comb?
I feel like you were actually being pranked. Like, this wasn't an Army regulation. This is just a sergeant who was tired of your bullshit and decided to fuck with you. Because here's the deal. Like, I hike a lot for work. I've encountered a lot of ticks and stuff. Lucky enough, I got bit once, but was able to get it out pretty quickly. You know when you get bit by a tick. Like, you don't need somebody to see it. You can feel a tick. Like, so if you want to do a check of yourself when you get out of the woods, I don't know, as a young man, I'm pretty familiar with what my genitals feel like. I can feel when there's a tick involved.
Okay, first off, Bobby, I should claim that I never actually saw anybody do it. It was just something I heard multiple times while in the Army. And secondly, I did it, and it was safe because we had a sergeant masturbating in the corner, which
yes,
I'm told was regulation.
But to be fair, he was masturbating with a fence lizard for everyone's safety, so that would keep the Lyme disease away.
Wait a second, that piece of shit didn't shear the lizard.
Yeah, he was pulling the old limp gecko game, if you know what I mean. All right, article number 4. A new study suggests that earthquakes are causing increased benzene in drinking water. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science, which is good news because children, especially in rural communities where they do fracking, need more benzene in their diets. And I'm glad the American heartland is stepping up. I'm glad private oil companies...
It's like fluoride
up
in the water they need it for their teeth.
Yeah, you see, human bones are too hard much of the time. They they don't shatter easily. Children loaded with benzene no longer have that problem.
Oh, dude. I feel like you're the tobacco industry when they discovered that like cigarettes can cause low birth weight babies, and the doctor from the tobacco industry while taking a drag on the cigarette was like, well, maybe some women would like smaller babies when they're given birth.
Now the lady's here trying to keep it tight as he takes a big drag. Like in front of Congress. Am I the only one? My old lady's the only one? Ah.
Kegels only go so far, gentlemen. Damien, this is actually bad science, by the way, meaning, once again, you have done no better than chance. 50-50, a sad showing, as usual, Damien. But I don't know what to say. I probably get another 1.54 million emails about this particular episode since it's going out to the general population, and just sad.
Maybe this is a compliment towards you, the test giver, Bobby. Have you thought about that?
What?
Maybe you're writing such a good test that it has me at the same odds as chance.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I haven't even, obviously have not edited nor posted this episode yet. And I just looked at my phone, 2,500 emails in the last 30 seconds about this loss.
You haven't even posted this. How do they know?
I know. That's how bad this is.
People have pirated this Zoom call, Bobby. I think you should be concerned.
This is bad science, but it does suggest that wildfires are actually causing increased benzene in drinking water, specifically fires that get close to plastic water supply piping that we think can actually melt or at least degrade some of this piping, causing the release of benzene into the drinking water supply. So this research was done in places like Paradise, California, where the Camp Fire destroyed an entire fucking town the other year. By the way, you guys might remember this. We talked a little bit about it on the show, and I'm sure you saw it on the news. Go back and look, though. Just look at what this did, because when we talk about wildfires, we're frequently talking about something that will destroy. You know, Damien and I grew up in wildfire country. It happens every year. Fire comes through. It'll take out, you know, a couple dozen houses. This destroyed a town. It wiped it off the fucking map. It is crazy to see.
We've been there. We've been through that town.
Yes, we have.
To think that not only that town, but the entire forest. Yeah, you're right. To expand upon your point, Bobby, it was a huge fucking chunk of land that it was incinerated.
It's crazy. So what they did is they found that some structures that weren't actually burned themselves, but the fire came close to and heated them up, those structures tested positive for high levels of benzene in the water after the fire. And they did some follow-up tests in the lab and showed that if you heat up these pipes, these plastic piping that sometimes are inside of houses, to 200 to 400 degrees Celsius, which they think some of them got to, and then, you know, put water through it, it releases benzene into the water. Benzene can cause a lot of problems. Immediate health problems can be things like rashes, skin irritation, dizziness, like irritated throat, but long-term effects are things like leukemia. So like fairly significant that you probably would not want. Now, the good news is that right now, most places that have water mains, those mains are done in metal because they have to take pressure. Now, I've been doing a project where we replace a lot of the water piping here in San Diego, and they have been using plastic. However, these are deep enough that even if a fire was right over them, it really couldn't warm them up enough to cause this. Where this seems to be happening is within the boundaries of private property. So a fire comes through your neighborhood, it burns down your neighbor's house, your house survives, but your house gets really hot as your neighbor's house is burning down, and that heat is what seems to be destroying that plastic piping. So something to think about is if a wildfire does come through your area and your house survives, you might have to replace some of your water pipes before you start using them, or use some other source of potable water before you do. Or if you are building a house in fire country, you don't have to use that plastic piping. It is much cheaper. I will tell you this right now. My wife and I, we can't afford to buy a house in San Diego. And so we bought some land and we're trying to build a house. And I've been doing the price comparisons. And it is much cheaper to use the plastic piping inside of your house than it is to do copper piping everywhere, the old school style. But I will say, like, this article alone has made me rethink the value of that cost, because there's two things. One is the copper piping will last forever. You're not going to have those problems with the heat. But the second is, and I've always been worried about this especially back when I was like a low voltage contractor and I would be hanging stuff on walls or drilling into walls, just like one stray drill bit in the wrong place with that plastic, like that flexible plastic piping, would be a very bad situation inside of your house.
All right, but can we at least do the sewage in the plastic?
Yeah, I mean, sewage is almost always ABS.
Oh, damn it. Well, at least my dream of rupturing a sewer line is still alive and well now. Hooray.
Yeah, actually, if you want to do it, Damien, actually, I know. Oh, no, I literally replaced the sewer lines in your neighborhood. I was on the project doing the sewer lines in your exact neighborhood, in your exact house before you lived in it, like 8 years ago. But not too far from you, where the original ones are, we still have the 1912 San Diego sewer lines, which are made out of terracotta. And one of the reasons we get so many backups is because fucking tree roots will seek out water, find a crack in the terracotta, grow into that, get all the poo water, break the thing open, and then constantly cause these huge ruptures in sewer lines here.
I'm going to go ahead and go back a second. You said you, replace the lines? So like you,
I was the archaeologist.
You were watching people dig
before you lived there.
You were watching people work, and then you stole Pooh Valor on a podcast 8 years later.
I found some historic sites around you, actually. That's how I know about that really cool spot next to you that I wanted to buy, because it's got a bunch of houses on one big plot of land. That's how I knew about it, as I actually did the sewer lines there not too long ago.
Well, there is a poo technician who went to Iraq probably as well, and you steal his valor when you claim to do his job.
I know. I knew that poo technician. He did go to Iraq. He wanted to get a break from the heat of Phoenix, which he had worked in before. Thank you, audience, for coming back for our special Science Faction Patreon episode, which is also Science Faction 531, because it's our freebie episode for Christmas, where you learned all about a new cheap catalyst that's been discovered to convert CO2 into jet fuel, how weapons from a prehistoric submerged land were actually made of human bone, why Lyme disease might be spreading a lot further to a lot more people pretty soon, and how wildfires are causing the release of benzene into our drinking water. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 532.
You're a dumb little bitch, Damien! You're a dumb little bitch!
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.